Appreciate it. That was interesting. Our next presenter is Dr. Sean Narum. Dr. Narum is the lead geneticist for Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. He's currently involved in a variety of genetic studies with emphasis on salmon conservation in the Columbia River Basin. Sean's presentation is entitled Use of Parental-Based Genetic Tagging as an Innovative Tool to Estimate Adult and Juvenile Abundance.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me here at this conference. I've found it very interesting. For those of you that are not familiar with the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission, it's an organization that's based in the Columbia River Basin in the southern U.S. It represents four Native American tribes that are in that particular region, and those are Nez Perce tribe that's in the state of Idaho, Yakima Nation, which is in the state of Washington, and then two tribes in the state of Oregon. I was asked to come here today to talk about some of our genetic research areas, in particular this first topic, genetic tagging and monitoring of fisheries, where we have this innovative technology that's being used to estimate stock-specific abundance, harvest, and runtime to assist with fisheries management. There's a couple other topics in here that we have heavily invested in genetic research in our laboratory that may be pertinent to some of the discussions we're having here, and I'd be happy to talk about some of those issues at one of the breaks or at another time. So back to the genetic tagging, I did want to acknowledge that while I oversee this program, the project leader is John Hess, who does much of the genetic analysis. I wanted to make sure he was acknowledged for his work here. So getting at the basis of this issue, we have intense monitoring and evaluation programs in place in the Columbia River Basin, and much of this is due to the major decline in the total Chinook catch in the Columbia River system. So you can see this long-term chart dating back to the late 1800s. There was these intense fisheries where this on the y-axis is the Chinook catch, the actual number of fish harvested, not the numbers of returns, and you're talking about millions of pounds of fish. So this is a tremendous amount of productivity from the system as far as numbers of fish and being caught in the system. As you can see, over time, the population decreased, and to date, we currently have only about 500,000 total returning fish to the system. So it's completely amazing to think back to these dates in the early part of the system where there were so many fish in that river. Of course, we have some major problems in the Columbia River Basin that aren't necessarily pertinent here. Some are and some aren't. In some of those early years, there's apparently some over-harvest effects. But then there's also some obvious habitat degradation that's occurred in the Columbia River Basin. This includes the construction of hydropower dams throughout the system. So there's several hydropower dams that were started to be built in the 1940s, and you can see there was a precipitous decline in numbers of fish harvested after that point, which coincides in this case to the number of returning fish. So with these major declines in the system, we now have genetic programs in place to estimate the composition of salmon runs during their upstream migration, where the ultimate goal here is to allow managers to shape fishing seasons to target the abundant, healthy populations that still remain while protecting some of the weakest populations that are listed under the Endangered Species Act. So our genetic monitoring programs are intended to estimate the stock composition of salmon fisheries. This includes commercial, sport, and tribal fisheries. You can think of tribal fisheries as subsistence fisheries, as you refer to them here in Alaska. And then we also have monitoring programs at some of the dams, which actually tell us which fish are present in the river at any given time. So if we look at a map of the Columbia River, so we have Washington, Oregon, and Idaho represented here, representing the majority of the Columbia River Basin. Two of the main monitoring locations that we have are pointed out here, Bonneville Dam, which is the first dam that Chinook salmon encounter on their upstream migration, and then Lower Granite Dam, which is the last of eight dams that these fish pass when they're migrating through the system. So as Chinook salmon enter the Lower Columbia River, they are intercepted by a variety of fisheries in the Lower Columbia. This includes sport, commercial, and tribal fisheries. And we have genetic monitors in place that are taking tissue samples from those fish and sending them to our laboratory in Hagerman, Idaho. as fish continue to migrate upstream. And we have monitoring in place at some of the fish ladders at Bonneville Dam, again, where tissue samples are being collected to estimate stock abundance and run timing of all the different fish that are returning to the system. Those fish continue to migrate, and they're intercepted by additional fisheries in the mid-Columbia. These are sport and tribal fisheries, where, again, we're estimating the stock composition of those fish that are harvested. And then finally, these fish will return to several terminal areas, including to the Snake River Basin, where Lower Granite Dam is one location where the managers, particularly from the state of Idaho, use that information for estimating escapement and a variety of other run timing information to the Snake River Basin. Likewise, for juveniles, we can do the same. We have a similar setup where juveniles are able to be sampled as they migrate downstream of the dams. So there's traps in place to estimate the composition and the timing of those outriver migrants. So we have two primary genetic tools that we use in combination for monitoring these fisheries. The first is referred to as genetic stock identification, or GSI, as you'll see it in the rest of the presentation. This is a method that's been in place for quite a while. It's been in use for over 30 years in fisheries. Generally consists of creating a baseline of reference population genetic data, which we can then use to identify unknown origin fish and assign them to their most likely origin. This is a method that Bill Templin's going to elaborate on a little bit further later. I'll talk about it a little bit more in the rest of the presentation, but you'll hear more about Alaska applications from Bill Templin following this. The second technique is called parentage-based tagging, and this is really the new technology that's become available with some of the new advances. It's a technique that's based on parentage analysis, which involves genotyping all hatchery broodstock parents. And by doing this, it allows us to identify all their offspring just using their DNA as an inherent tag that's present in all the fish. So the data that's obtained from this type of program is similar to CodeAware tags, but with greatly improved tagging rates. So with parentage-based tagging, we get nearly 100% of the fish are tagged, whereas in the Columbia Basin hatcheries, only 5 to 10% of the fish are actually injected with a CodeAware tag. Another important point to mention here is that no juveniles have to be handled or injected with physical tags, and this will make more sense in just a minute when I explain it a little further. A few more details about these two methods. The top is cut off there, but it's the genetic stock ID application, creating a baseline of reference populations. And what we have here is each of the tributaries in the Columbia River where Chinook salmon are present. We can go to these streams, sample a represented number of individuals, and genotype them with genetic markers. These genetic markers give us information on how genetically similar populations are within these regions and help us to identify genetically distinct groups. These are the baseline populations and genetic groups that we use for assigning unknown origin fish. So as fish are caught in the lower Columbia and other areas, we can use the DNA from those fish and assign them to their population or their genetic group that they most likely originated based off of simply their genetic material. A couple things to point out with this genetic stock ID method is that there is some misassignment that can occur, so there is potential for errors of assigning fish to the wrong reporting group depending on how genetically similar those groups are, and it also does not provide age information based off of simply the genetic data. Okay, next I wanted to go into a little more detail about parentage-based tagging. It says PBT at the top there. So this is a method that is very efficient and essentially uses DNA as the tag that's inherent in all of these fish. So if we look at the diagram on the left, what we have is a situation where we can go into a hatchery where broodstock are being spawned and the eggs are taken and reared. We can take a small tissue sample from all the adult fish, so essentially all the parents, and by the fact that all this genetic material is inherited in their offspring, we have therefore genetically tagged all of those offspring that are produced from all the parents in this particular system. So that means that at a different life stage, either at juvenile or adult life stage, we can take another tissue sample from those fish and assign them exactly back to their parents of origin. So it's a similar concept or similar application to parentage testing in humans. So if we want to know what the parent is of any particular child, we can use DNA to match them to their parents. So similar type of application here, but just using fish and using the same type of technology. So this genetic tagging of these hatchery broodstock allows us to identify their offspring that are produced. And as I mentioned, it's a passive mark, so there's no handling of juveniles involved. So we don't have to physically go in and insert tags into millions of offspring that are produced in these hatcheries. The fact that we're taking a tissue sample from hundreds or maybe a few thousand broodstock fish allows us to efficiently tag millions of their offspring. So it's very efficient in that regard. And because DNA is inherent in all these fish, it eliminates issues with tag loss, tag detection, or handling mortality. And it's also important to point out it's possible to collect non-lethal samples to recover the tag from the offspring. So instead of like Cotoir tags where you have to cut the head off the fish, we can take a non-lethal tissue sample and get the genetic information, and those fish can be released back into the system. This approach essentially results in nearly 100% tagging rate of the hatchery fish, which is much higher, as I mentioned, than some of the previous physical tags that are inserted. So this potentially results in a dramatic increase in the number of tags that can be recovered in any particular scenario, which may result in improved estimates of stock composition, particularly as it relates to precision of estimates. So unfortunately, many of my slides have the top line cut off, but this says Snake River Basin. So this is a PBT application, the location of where PBT was initiated in the Snake River, which you can see from the map on the top right corner is the most interior portion of the Columbia River. So starting in 2008 in a collaborative effort with Idaho Fish and Game, we started sampling all hatchery broodstock. This included about 5,000 steelhead and 9,000 Chinook salmon per year. And by genotyping these, like we mentioned, it allowed us to genetically tag approximately 20 million smolts per year without ever having to handle the juveniles. Some of the hatcheries also collect additional information such as spawn dates and sex, and many of the hatcheries also provide lengths and spawn crosses. This is particularly useful information for understanding the population and getting estimates of reproductive success. So this is program in the Snake River has been in place since 2008. Starting in 2012, we expanded this program to much of the rest of the Columbia River Basin, which includes the Upper Columbia, which is shown in green, and the Mid-Columbia as those blue dots. So those are all different hatcheries throughout the Columbia River Basin. One thing I guess it's important to notice is that these particularly PBT approaches, I'm emphasizing its use in hatchery programs, and that's because about 70 to 80% of the fish that are returning to the system are hatchery origin now, so there's very few wild fish left in this system. One thing I did want to make sure to mention, though, is that there is the potential to include wild stocks in this PBT approach if wild parents can be sampled at locations such as weirs, and some of that we saw earlier today where there are weirs throughout the system in Alaska. In the Columbia River, we have a variety of weirs in some locations where we're also able to add some of those wild fish to these estimates. To give you an idea of what the kind of numbers we're talking about here, we have each year since 2008, and the number of broodstock that were sampled ranges from about 8 to 10,000 individuals, of which we genotype the majority of almost all of those. So by genotyping almost all those, we're essentially tagging 92 to 99% of those offspring. And so if you think about all the smolts that are produced at that tagging rate, we're tagging between 14 million and 18 million fish just by genotyping somewhere around 9,000 fish each year. So you see how that efficiency starts to pay off in that regard. Okay, so once we've tagged, what I've talked about here primarily so far is just how we've used parentage-based tagging to tag fish. The next slide shows us how we can recover those tags from PBT tagged offspring. So as I mentioned, we can recover these tags from either juveniles or adults. As I mentioned, it is a non-lethal tissue sample that's necessary. So for example, in those juvenile fish, we can take a very small piece of fin from those individuals and release them back into the system. For the fish on the right that's actually been harvested, it's just going to go in a cooler later, so it doesn't really matter if it's non-lethal, right? But the point is we take a tissue sample, we genotype that individual, and using that genotype, we can identify on the bottom right the exact parents of those fish because we've genotyped their parents in that previous generation. So once we've identified their parents, our records show us exactly which hatchery those fish were produced in and the exact brood year, giving us the age. And these are the important components that are used in fishery models. All right, so we've talked so far a lot about the concepts of PBT. I wanted to actually show you how we've implemented this in the Columbia River Basin and in some fishery applications. So what we have here is an example of the sport fishery. The sport fishery is, in this case, in the lower Columbia River. And One thing to note is it's a marked selective fishery, so all the hatchery fish are adipose clipped, so these hatchery fish are the only ones that are retained in this particular fishery. In 2012, there are about 1,300 fish that our monitors were actually able to sample. All of those samples, of course, have DNA, so they are all included in our analysis. And using the PBT approach, we can assign them exactly back to their hatchery of origin. And I've split this out, at least the pie diagram, into these major geographic areas in the Columbia River, but it's important to recognize that we're actually assigning parents to exactly their hatcheries. So I identified those specific hatcheries, in this case, by adding the names to those locations in the Snake River. And so we could split that, particularly in this case, the red portion of the pie, into much finer levels to understand what proportion of fish actually came from Lion's Ferry Hatchery, Grand Ronde, the Dwarf Shack, Pisimori, and so forth. So it gives very tight information, exact information based on the parents' information. Similarly, we have a commercial fishery in the lower Columbia, and it is also a marked selective fishery where only hatchery fish are retained. There was a little under 900 fish sampled by our monitors this year, and we use the PBT approach to assign them back to their exact parents of origin. And this is an example of how the stock proportions break out for the Columbia Basin. All right, so these are some of the fishery applications. One of our most important monitoring locations in the system is at Bonneville Dam, where weekly sampling occurs starting at the beginning of the run from April and runs through October. And this monitoring program allows us to get stock-specific return timing for fish throughout the system. And so at Bonneville Dam, we have, like I said, monitors in place where they're taking tissue samples at a trap at some of the fish ladders where they're encountering both hatchery and wild origin fish. Now, the hatchery fish, the strongest tool for them is using this parentage-based tagging approach, and we get similar results to what we talked about in the previous two slides where we're assigning fish exactly to their parents of origin. The wild fish, however, because most of those parents have not yet been sampled, we can still use the genetic stock ID tool that we talked about earlier and determine the stock proportions that assign back to these different genetic groups that we determined from our baseline. And so this is a fairly comprehensive method of evaluating and monitoring these fish as they're passing this location at Lower Granite Dam. And so not only do we know what fish are present in the river throughout the entire run, but we can break this into weekly strata so we can look at how different stocks change in their composition over time. So if we were to take an example and look at the bottom GSI graphs, I'll draw your attention to the yellow pie diagram, or yellow piece of the pie, which if you look over time, it's increasing in abundance over the course of the run through Bonneville Dam. So this is particularly useful information to have and know about what exact stocks are passing through the river at a given time. And it's particularly informative for some of the upstream fisheries above Bonneville Dam. The next fishery is in that mid-Columbia area, so this box is now representing the geographic region where there's a tribal fishery and a sport fishery. And in the tribal fishery, we can, again, take our hatchery fish, use the PBT tool to assign them exactly back to their hatchery of origin and get age information. But tribal fisheries are non-selective, so we're also sampling wild fish from these stocks. And here again, just like in the previous example, we're using GSI to assign individuals back to their geographic origin or their stocks of origin in the basin. And lastly, as for our adult monitoring programs, we have a location in place at Lower Granite Dam. So this is the interior portion of the Columbia. Most of the stocks have already returned to other areas, but essentially is recording individuals that are returning to Lower Granite Dam. It's very useful for looking at stock-specific return timing and escapement for the Snake River. At Lower Granite Dam, now our PBT estimates are exactly to their hatcheries of origin, right? So that pie diagram is now all red, but actually it's the stock composition is divided between each of those different hatcheries. Likewise, for genetic stock ID, most of our stocks at Lower Granite Dam are now just the populations above in the Snake River. So now we only have essentially three pieces of the pie. And some of you may point out that it's possible to have strays from downstream, and indeed we test for that and we're able to identify those individuals and account for them in the at Lower Granite Dam as well. So these have been the kind of the concepts for the adult monitoring. As far as juvenile monitoring, we can essentially sample smolts that are collected at both Bonneville and Lower Granite Dams that include both hatchery and wild origin fish. And again, taking a small non-lethal fin clip, we can then genotype them and use our parentage-based tagging and genetic stock ID approaches. This is particularly useful information because we're able to relate stock-specific survival and abundance to migration patterns that are available from other physical tags, such as pit tags. So in the Columbia River Basin, we have pit tag locations and receivers at all the dams. So as these fish migrate downstream, if they have a pit tag inserted, we can actually look at their exact migration, and the genetic information provides exactly what stocks those individuals came from. The picture on the bottom there shows us a smolt that's had pit tags inserted, so it's a smaller tag on the right, acoustic tags, which are used for tracking migration patterns in the ocean, and then we had also used the parentage-based tagging method on these fish. So we had an abundance of information that gave us stock-specific information to link to these physical tags. This is a slide that just shows essentially the results from 1 week of sampling at Lower Granite Dam for the smolts there using the parentage-based tagging approach. It's just the numbers of individuals that are assigned to the different hatcheries in the basin and their general geographic region. Of course, there are some unassigned fish with this method, but we use, again, the genetic stock ID tool for those unassigned fish to determine their stock proportions. All right, just to quickly summarize, these genetic tagging and monitoring programs we have in place in the Columbia help us identify adult return timing by stock, particularly at the two dams that I mentioned. That helps us understand what stocks are most abundant in the river over the course of their migration seasons. Also help us understand stock-specific harvest information. This is highly relevant for allocation agreements between lower and upriver partners. And so there's some definite effects here that can translate to other rivers. And the Yukon was one that struck me this morning that has this lower and upriver partners and allocation agreements between stocks. And then lastly, we can use it for juvenile stock monitoring by using non-lethal sampling. It provides us stock abundance information for out migrating juveniles, which we can then link to migration data from other types of tags. And lastly, I just want to acknowledge a number of people that go into these tagging and monitoring programs, including the field sampling that's required to take all these tissue samples. There's a number of genetics laboratory technicians that are genotyping tens of thousands of samples each year. I mentioned John Hess as the project leader, and the funding is primarily from Bonneville Power Administration for this program. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. Time for questions from our panel. Bill?
Bill Templin, Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Sean, could you talk briefly about what you see as potential problems with applying PBT type studies to wild populations?
So the biggest component of applying parentage-based tagging is we want to sample the majority of the adults, or essentially the parents that are returning to a particular system. So in a wild location, weir, obviously, if there's a fairly strong weir where there's intensive sampling occurring, it's possible to get the majority of parents sampled at those weirs, and some of those locations were identified this morning here in Alaska. In the Columbia River, that's also a challenge, is having enough weirs in place to actually represent enough of the wild population, but there's also the potential to essentially pick some of the main indicator stocks and utilize that information for the wild fish.
Just a point of clarification on that question. When you say majority, do you mean like 95% of the spawning population?
100% is the ideal, right? So that's the perfect scenario to have, is to be able to sample all parents. In most cases, that's not realistic. With this parentage-based tagging method, even 10% of the adults provides information, because we're not necessarily misassigning any individuals. We're only assigning offspring to their parents. So if a parent isn't represented, it just doesn't assign to anywhere. So you get a lot more efficiency by having 95 to 100% of the parents tagged, but you still get information from, you know, a smaller proportion of those wild fish.
Milo. So just to see if I understand it, if you can you detect or assign the offspring to a stock if you'd only genotyped one of the parents?
That's right. And in the cases where we have, I had pointed out a couple cases where we have unassigned fish. So those are fish that don't assign to a parent because we likely did not sample their parents for some reason. And so for those unassigned fish, that's where the genetic stock ID tool comes into place, where we don't need any parents. We've already created this baseline, which acts as a reference. And that's where these two tools of genetic stock ID and parentage-based tagging work to complement each other.
Bill Templin, Alaska Department of Fish and Game. So based on your last comment there, then, have you looked into using the parentage-based tagging and the GSI together, using one to help inform the other?
Absolutely. So I had shown an example of the tribal fishery in the mid-Columbia area where they're sampling both hatchery origin and wild origin fish. Like I mentioned, parentage-based tagging is a very straightforward application for hatchery applications because all the hatchery parents are usually being handled and spawned in the hatchery. It's fairly easy to get our hands on tissue samples there. And so that's a clear application where we're able to assign hatchery origin fish that are caught in the tribal fishery with the parentage-based tagging method. But they also are catching some wild fish, right? So many of those wild fish don't have parents represented, so that's where we use genetic stock identification to account for those unassigned fish.
This is Bill again. So you're doing that as two separate processes then?
The first step is to do the parentage assignment because that's an exact match, like I said. So we're not assigning fish whether they're most likely from one area or another. It's exactly, can we identify their parents from the baseline? And so essentially all those fish that already have an assignment with the parentage-based tagging approach, then they're removed from the further analysis and we only take the unassigned fish for genetic stock identification.